except you're muted. Hold on.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
You can hear me now, right?
Yes.
My name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic. And first, I want to thank Arisa, my baby, and Cynthia, my grandbaby, for inviting me to speak. And also, I wanted to thank Ashley and Gail. I thought of so many things when they were speaking, but one of the things I thought about when Ashley was speaking was about traveling. And I just remembered this one story. So I had been traveling through China on business for 10 days. And we were in Hong Kong, and it was my 25th A birthday. And I was so excited. And I left my hotel room, and there was a cameraman who was with us, and he was in the hall. And I said, I'm so excited. It's my 25th sobriety birthday. And then when I looked at him, I realized he was really drunk. And he said, that's so fantastic. He said, it's 10 years since I've been to McDonald's. And I thought, oh my God, this is so great. And then the other thing is, when Gail was talking, you know, when I went to Akron, I don't think that I expected the emotion that I felt. And Gail does this wonderful, wonderful, there's just such a wonderful exhibit. And I was so touched by the letters and all that. And then, hold on for a sec. Then I went to Dr. Bob's house, and I walked into the house, and I saw the typewriter, and I'm a writer, and I saw the typewriter where the big book with Bob and Bill, they had written back and forth. And I started to weep, just uncontrollably weep at the beauty of a typewriter and these inspired people by God who'd written this book that has saved us, you know. So that was the other thing. And then when we talked about women, so the first woman in Los Angeles was Sybil. And I always remember, because I used to hear Sybil speak, I always remember this story. So Sybil had read the article in, I forget, was it Life magazine? And so she asked her husband to take her to an AA meeting, and they went downtown. There was a hotel downtown where they met. And they went in, and they told the husband he could come in, but they kicked Sybil out. And so, like a good alcoholic, she went home and got drunk. And I always remembered that about the role of women in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is so potent, you know. And with each decade, it is more potent. And with each decade, and as I listened to all the speakers yesterday, one of the things I thought to myself was, we all are so alike. We are so different, and we are so alike. And I was listening to Ashley talk, and I thought, my childhood was so different than her childhood. But in order to talk about steps 8 and 9, I have to tell you who the people were so you know who I made amends to. And I'm really grateful you asked me to speak about these steps, because honestly, they're the into action steps, and I'm an action girl. That's me. I'm into action in every aspect of my life. And so I grew up in St. Louis, and my mother's one of 15, and my father was one of 11, and we all lived in the same neighborhood. And my mother had many, many sisters. And so there was my mother, and then there were the other mothers, not like Margaret Atwood mothers, but the other mothers. And I was the girl. They all had boys, or there were tragedies and the girls had died. And so I was the girl on which they showered affection, truly showered affection on me. That's all I can remember, is these incredible women who all worked into their 80s, who I never heard complain, and who were not alcoholics. On the other side of my family, my father's side of the family, he was one of 11. my father, they all drank except for one, you know. So there was a clear division. You say the rosary beads on my mother's side of the family, and you pray for all the people tap dancing and singing and really having fun on my father's side of the family. And my mother told me, if you are a woman and you drink, you will destroy your family. So that was a clear message. But the clearer message to me from my mother was, you are the one who is going to succeed. That's it. You're going to fulfill all of our ambitions. They were all not formally educated, but my grandfather read the classics to them every night in the living room, and they were all readers. They were really informed, they were articulate, but they needed me. I understand this now only because I'm sober. They needed me to be the one who fulfilled these dreams for them. And I did. I have a brother. So just let me, I need to say this part so you understand when I make my amends. My brother left when I was two to go to the seminary. And they were so happy. They were so happy that my brother went to the seminary. However, I was two and I had no idea what had happened. I don't know what the seminary is. I don't know why they're happy. I don't know where he is. And I get it very quickly that you don't talk about it. That's it. You don't. Mm-mm. Anything that was really significant in the family, Irish Catholic family, you do not talk about it. And they didn't talk about it, and I didn't talk about it. So I went to, I lived in a, you know, in the city, in an Irish Catholic neighborhood. Really, seriously, I mean, the Italians were on the other side of the school. That's how divided it was. The Germans were somewhere else, but, you know, the Irish, as they used to say in my family, there are only two kinds of people in the world, the Irish and those who wish they were. I mean, seriously, I could have grown up in Ireland because that's how they treated it. Anyway, when it came time to go to high school, all my friends went to the local high school, but I went to the very, very fancy girls' school in the very, very fancy neighborhood. And it began, I believe, my long journey. I now think of it as, you know, in Ireland, they used to put put people on the boat and say, go to America and make good for yourself. And I believe that was the beginning of my journey to make good. And I did. I mean, here's the thing. I didn't tell anybody, you know, that my father had to work two jobs to send me to this school. I didn't tell anybody where we lived. I just succeeded. I was on the student council. I was a cheerleader. I was all these things that would have made my mother proud, really made my mother. That is... because she's the one, you know. And I had my first drink at my senior prom. And I had my first drink because of the nuns. Because the nuns sewed netting on my dress and made me look like a horrible person. And one of the boys said to me, come out to the back of the gym. And in the back of the gym in my all-girl high school, at my senior prom, I had my first drink. And then I had my second, and then I had my third, and then I did cartwheels in front of the nuns. So that's, you know, that is my story with the nuns. And they also come into amends, by the way. I went to college in New York. The drinking age was 18. First girl to go to college. 135 people from my family came to the train station because my father worked for the railroad. And if I was going to New York, I was going to take the train. And so I did. And I went and I left and goodbye. And I don't need you. And I'm on my way to the big city. It's like some 19th century novel. And then they were gone. And then I was alone. And then I had to fend for myself in a way I had no idea. So I drank. And turned 18 my first weekend there. Love Slow Gin Fizz. I don't even know why I liked, I mean, I, you know, I liked martinis. I liked very sophisticated drinks. I never drank beer once because the people in St. Louis drank beer and I wasn't going to be like them. So I didn't drink beer. And who needs beer when you have all these sophisticated drinks, you know? So anyway, after my freshman year, when I drank all the time and went to all these boys' schools. Now, this is the other thing I want to talk about in terms of amends is you would think that with that loving family, I would not need the attention of men so much. But the truth is, underneath all this loving family, my brother was gone. My father worked two jobs because this all happened when I was like sixth and seventh grade, when my father worked two jobs and my mother got a job. And suddenly I was coming home to a house alone, dark, cold house alone. And did I know until I got sober that they were doing it for me? No, I didn't. I just knew they were all gone and I was there alone. And thus began this, I think, need, I don't, the warmth of a man holding me. And but what I didn't understand was why I always had to have two men. I always had two boyfriends. And that was a pattern of my drinking, two boyfriends. I could have had more. I mean, I was just like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't even understand it, but let's just say two was not even enough, but two was what I had. And I got kicked out of that college after my first year because of my drinking. And my mother told me I couldn't tell anyone. And I got back in because I wrote a letter. I didn't know I was going to be a writer. I wrote a letter. You know, speaking of being a writer, I was thinking about this yesterday. I write this blog for this Hollywood website, and it's called Now and Then. And I realized that's what this whole step is, now and then. And how then we have to clear away the debris of then in order to be now. And so, and it just dawned on me. In fact, doing the, just thinking about this step for you, you know, if you're new in AA, this is one of the things. We never know what it really means when someone asks us to do something in AA. Like if they say you need to sweep the floor and you do it, what you don't understand is that in your career, when your boss asks you to do something and you do it, this is what's happening. And as I was preparing for this, and really reading the big book over and over again and everything, what happened to me in preparing was I realized I have been in a war with God over this man that I love so much. I have been in a war because I want to protect him. And in doing this, I realized that my way is not the way, that God's way. And it's so interesting when you're in really deep emotional pain, sober, you then at some point have to surrender it to this power greater than ourselves. And it took all this conference, you asking me, you know, for you, it's one thing. For me, it was like, I give up. I don't know how to protect him as he's transitioning to a different life. I can't do it. It's not my job. But that's what happened to me. It's like I had a spiritual awakening preparing for this. So I want to thank you for that very much. Anyway, so to sort of just continue the story, I got back into the college. I graduated from the college. I had a lot of boyfriends. And then I came back home to St. Louis and I couldn't get a job because I only typed 17 words a minute. No one would hire me. So, I mean, no one would hire me for a bad job is what I want to say. But my local newspaper, the publisher, I met with him and he said, I'm hiring you as a reporter. And And I said, well, oh, that's so lovely, but I just want you to know I can't type. And he said, I don't care if you can type, you can think. And it was so true. And I've been a journalist my whole life. And I wanted to say, when Ashley said something, I wanted to say, I just really, really loved what she said about anonymity and reporters. The way I do it is I have never written anything about anyone in AA, ever. And if I happen to interview anybody in AA, I never tell them I'm sober until it's all over, the tape recorder is gone. Because I know if I say it, they will tell me things that they would never have told me just as a journalist. And I am very protective of people's anonymity. I have written searing letters this year to many publications about anonymity because it's so important. And it's not just important on a public level. It's important in AA. One of the things I've seen, you know, I'm sober. My birthday is July 4th, 1977. So I've been sober a long time. But I have seen many people go out in AA just because they think they're so special. And the point of AA is to put us all together. We're you know, this phrase they keep saying, you know, we're all in it together in the pandemic. But in AA, we are all in it together. That's why, you know, it's just miraculous. I mean, it's just miraculous. I remember I was doing a story about President Gerald Ford. I do remember this. And I was maybe, I don't know, you know, 4 months sober. And I was in Vail, Colorado, where they were. And I had to go to a meeting because I didn't think I could stay sober, you know. And then this guy told me exactly what to do. And I wanted to say, and he worked on a street gang. He was like, you know, fixing potholes. But I listened to every word he said, because this is the thing about AA. It's the great equalizer for all of us. And so anyway, I became this reporter. And the greatest thing about being a reporter then was there was a bar across the street. And that was it. That was the greatest thing. In St. Louis, it was the Typo Bar. In Los Angeles, it was the Redwood. And you went to the bar. I mean, some people went home, but we didn't like them, you know. Some people went home to their children. And speaking of children and Mother's Day, I should have said this first. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. And you know, I have a lot of faith in doctors, except in one area. Every single doctor I ever went to said I would never have a child. And then I got sober and I realized these doctors haven't met the higher power, because when I was 38 years old, I had Megan. And Nicholas just came as a gift from God. He didn't come out of my stomach, but he's my son. And he came as a gift from God. And those two children made me understood motherhood in a way I never would have, ever. Because it doesn't matter if you know, a mother is the person who raises the child. That's who the mother is. So anyway, so I worked in St. Louis at one of the world's great newspapers, and I met a boy, but I couldn't drink at home. I was living at home. You cannot move to an apartment if you're an Irish Catholic and during my age, unless you're married. So I met a boy who lived in California. I knew him a couple of weeks. He said, do you want to get married? I said, yes. I left. I quit my job. I left everybody in my family. Goodbye. On my way to California. And I got a job at another great newspaper, really great, which had a great bar. And thus I started this insane drinking. I said I was married, which I was, but I forgot about that at that bar often. I completely forgot that I was married. And there were a lot of things that went on at the bar and other things that, you know, all these were the things that I kept silent until I got to AA and wrote my inventory. So, and a lot of these things became part of my amends. Anyway, I think I just want to talk about, so getting sober, the first person who ever mentioned AA to me was at this beautiful, beautiful party in Beverly Hills. And the waiter came up and asked the two of us, would you like a drink? And she said, no, thank you. I'm an alcoholic. She was my boss's new wife. And I thought, oh, this poor man. Oh my God, this man has married an alcoholic. This is horrendous. And shortly after that, I'd taken off all my clothes and jumped in the pool at the party. So I think I was the one that was horrible, not her. But she's the person who brought me into AA. It took me 6 more years to get here. And one of the reasons it took 6 more years is that my career kept getting better. And that is something important to me, because how could I possibly have a problem with alcohol, because I'm not like those people in St. Louis. Those are the people who are stupidly drunk. Not me. I'm traveling the world. I have this great job. But this was my life. I would sit in a room for months at a time trying to write and telling myself how terrible I was, and missing deadlines and pulling knives on people and sleeping with people and just demoralizing myself in every way. And also I couldn't figure out why I could leave my house and then I couldn't remember anything that would happen the rest of the night. I just couldn't. So finally I was in and out of the hospital with my back and this guy was trying to help me. The doctors were giving me massive amounts of medication for my back. And I had a bleeding ulcer. So a lot of things were going on. And this guy said he was sober in AA and wanted to know if I wanted to go to an AA meeting. And I thought, AA, oh no, oh God, no, AA. But anyway, this is what finally happened. There were a lot of terrible things that happened that I didn't talk to him about, but I went to the Oscars and I went in, and then I don't know what happened, but I ended up in the bushes outside the Oscars with two men. And I told him about it. And I said, he said, wait, you ended up in the Oscar, you ended up in the bushes outside the Oscars with two men? And I said, yeah. And I said, do you think I might be an alcoholic? And he said, I think you really might be an alcoholic. So do you want to go to an AA meeting? And I don't even know why I said yes. And I did. I did. Wow. And, but he didn't, he drove his car, I drove mine. He was smart. He realized I needed to walk in on my own. And I did. And the woman I sat next to, who was my first sponsor, who was my dear friend, took me out for coffee. I always have to remember to take newcomers out for coffee. And she asked me when I had my last drink, and then she asked me, did I take anything else? And I said, well, I mean, I take a lot of pills, but they're all prescribed by doctors. And she said, in AA, we don't drink or use. And thus began the truly craziest few years of my life, I promise you. I mean, some of you might come in and have obeyed all the rules. I didn't obey any rules. And I fell in love at my second meeting. I was living with a guy. I was separated from my husband, living with a guy. And I fell in love with this guy at my second meeting. So now I have to start working the steps. And there are many steps that take a lot of courage. The fourth step takes courage. Reading it to somebody in the fifth step takes a lot of courage. I've had people come to my door and run away. They just couldn't do it. But the real steps of courage are not 8, but 9. 8, we make the list, or the sponsor makes the list. And then we look back. Then we think, you know, it says in an unsparing survey of human wreckage left in the past, reopening old wounds. Wow, you know, I mean, to err is human, but to forgive is divine. And that's what happens when you do the 9 steps. So now I am writing this list. Oh, no. This is way, way too painful. My father? What? No. Okay. Did I know that I shut him out because he worked 2 jobs in to send me to good schools and was never home? No. Mm-mm. Did I know that? My brother, who left when I was 2 and never came back? Did I know that the cement in my heart came from that? No, I didn't. I didn't understand that all these men that I wanted to love me so much, I didn't understand that these resentments that I had been holding on to since I was a little girl. I'd been to therapy maybe 3 or 4 times before I got sober. Did I even mention once that I had a brother? Never. Never even mentioned I had a brother. So now I get to this inventory and she's writing these names down. Oh my God, you know, my mother. No, I adore my mother. Oh, I did stand in the living room and say, fuck you to my mother. I mean, I never. Oh yeah, when I was really misbehaving and really drunk, I just didn't call her. Oh, see, she abandoned me. Oh no, I abandoned her. That family, they don't care about me. Well, of course they care about me, but I left everyone. So all these names are on my list, 8th step, to make an amends. The editor of the magazine. I mean, he's trying to get in touch with me and I'm in London and I'm so drunk, I fell into the closet in the hotel room at the Dorchester, which happens to be this fabulous hotel. I can't get out of the closet. I can't get to the phone. The guy is frantic to know what's happening with the story. I can't even get out of the closet to talk to him. My ex-husband. Oh, no. He was my husband. I had forgotten that. You know, my husband. You know, in other words, for me, the amends were all about family. For me, and I think about this because I'm sober as such a long time, what I started to think about in preparing for this is, you know, we call alcoholism a progressive disease. The 9th step is about a progressive healing. Because it might have one impact when you make it, but down the road, down the decades, whoa, does it have an impact on your life? You know, I remember they would say things like, you never have to cross the street if you see someone. You know, they kept saying, you know, you get so defensive when you're talking about your brother, whatever. And, but there they were. And I'm not making amends to my brother. He left me. He's never said he loves me. But anyway, I looked at the list. I did the list. And as I looked at it, and as I started, it was like one obstacle after another just melted away. That is the truth, you know. And I didn't know, which I know now, that the 9th step leads to the promises. I didn't know that. It leads to freedom, a freedom that you will never know. We all know this, who've worked it. A freedom you will never know. It to me, it restored me to who I was, because I realize I had cut off. It's like I cut off half my body because I'd cut off people I loved. And then I had to go back. And my boss was one of the first people I made amends to. He came out here. I remember he was staying at this very beautiful hotel in Los Angeles. And he called me and he said, "We have to talk. What's wrong with you?" Because I was not able. I couldn't think straight. So I went to the hotel and he confronted me and he said, "What's wrong with you? Are you on drugs?" And I had to say to him, "No, I'm off of them. I'm not drinking anymore. I'm not taking that speed that let me overcome my fear to start writing a sentence. And if you want me to quit, if you don't want me, I will quit, but I can never be that girl that I was. I can't be that person who churns out one thing after another." And instead of having me quit, he just found two of the most beautiful, sensitive editors for me to work with, who literally carried me through my first couple of years of sobriety. Now my mother. Okay, so wow, how am I going to make amends to my mother? First of all, I never raised my hand when I was new. So, because I didn't want to say I was an alcoholic, but I was at a meeting, and I'll just tell you about the meeting. It was crazy. I only liked really crazy meetings when I was new. I didn't like any meetings that were structured. And there was a meeting called Architects of Adversity. And at this meeting, there was a guy who brought rolls of toilet paper to every meeting, like 10 rolls. Where is he now? That's what we want to know. But anyway, we all need toilet paper. But anyway, he would pull it out and write on it. And then there was a woman who came. She was a bag lady. She had all these bags. And then there was a guy who wouldn't wear a shirt. And so at this meeting, a woman named Claire S. was next to me, and she hit me like that. And she said, "You have to raise your hand and say you're an alcoholic." And so this is what I said: "My name is Mary. I am an alcoholic, and I don't want to tell my mother." And that's what I said. And after the meeting, this woman, Molly, said, "I want to take a picture of you. You have such a pretty dress on." Oh, she got Art, the guy with the toilet paper, the bag lady, and the guy without the shirt. She put him in the picture. She then mailed the picture to me and said, "Send this to your mother and tell her these are your new friends." It was like, oh my God, you know, oh no, you know. But AA, is the thing about AA in the beginning is it makes you laugh. There are all these crazy stories that, you know, that make people laugh. The other things that happen when you're new, I thought about this the other day, is I went to this meeting and this guy was sitting next to me and he said, "Are you coming back next week?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And he said, "I'll save you the seat." So the whole week I thought, I have to go to the meeting because the man is saving me the seat. So anyway, now I have to think about, what am I going to do? How am I going to tell my mother, one, that I'm an alcoholic? Because I live in California. See, I'm staying away from her, so she doesn't know. I didn't even tell her that I was getting a divorce. I mean, I just didn't do anything. And now I have to go back to St. Louis because this has to be in person. And so I go back and I stay in a hotel. The one and only time I've ever stayed in a hotel in my hometown. I tell my mother I'm staying in a hotel. And I don't know, maybe 2 hours after I am there, there's a knock on my hotel door and there's my mother. No way am I staying in a hotel. So anyway, I have to tell her. Oh God, I have to tell her I'm an alcoholic. And I have to tell her things and I have to make amends. And she asked me one question that I wish she had never asked me. Why an Irish Catholic mother asked me this question, I don't know. But she said to me, "You didn't ever like go to a bar and meet a strange man, did you?" Oh my God. Yes. Third Street or Third Avenue, New York. Patrick the bartender. You know, I mean, there were many of them, but Yes, I have, Mom. Oh, God, she was just so upset. So she said to me, this was her response to my amen. Never tell anyone in the family and never talk about it on the telephone. I guess because she thought someone would overhear that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, because no one in the family had ever gotten sober. The irony of that is that when my mother came to Los Angeles, because I'm a member of the Pacific Group and the big Wednesday night meeting, my mother always came to the Wednesday night meeting. But I, and loved that, but just never tell anybody in the family. So I didn't. That was the deal. So then I have to, I don't know how to make an amend to my brother. I don't, but I do. I call him, I go to Kansas City, I meet with him. I tell him I've had this resentment. Because once he left the seminary, then he got married, moved to Kansas City. And I know he's a wonderful father, but he's a terrible brother. But I don't say that. I tell him I'm an AA and that I love him. And he says nothing back. He's kind to me, but he says nothing back. And so that's my amend. And then I have to make an amend to this husband, Terrence Murphy. What a great guy. And I cheated on him. I mean, I just didn't just cheat on him, like go out of town and meet a stranger. I cheated on him in our own apartment. I mean, this is how crazy I was drunk. I was, I got out of the hospital. They put me in traction. I don't know, there's an old way to deal with a bad back. And so I would be in traction, be on these medications from the doctors for pain, have a cooler of white wine next to me. And when my husband went to work, my lover came and I had an affair. I mean, really, I mean, this is, we can see how insane this is, but I, oh my God. So now I have to make an amend to this husband, but I have to make sure I do it by the way the big book talks about, because, you know, to hurt, I cannot hurt him. I have to talk to him. I have to make an amends to him, but I cannot tell him the specifics because it would have killed him. He loved me so much. And so I made an amend, and part of the amend was when we had been in London one time, we bought this beautiful clock and he always wanted it. And drunkenly, when I moved out of him, I took the clock. And so I brought the clock back. And I gave it to him, and it might seem like nothing to you, but it was the beginning of, because all these things are a beginning. That's what I want you to know if you're new. This is not the end. You don't sit down, make the amend, and then it's over. You make the amend, and it's the beginning. It's not the end. It's the beginning. And so I made an amend to my ex-husband. And but my father... So then in writing about my father and putting his name on the thing, then I saw what he had given up, what he had sacrificed, how much he'd worked for me, how much. And when my father died, I was drunk. When my father died, I was sitting at my computer at this newspaper, and my uncle called and said, "I'm sorry, I have this really sad news. Your father died." And so this is what I did. I had a scotch in my drawer, and I also had speed. So I took the speed, drank the scotch, and finished the story. That's what I did. Then I went home for his funeral and never shed a tear. And then when I got sober, maybe, you know, 6 months after I got sober, some woman at a meeting said, my, my father had a heart attack and he died last night. And that is exactly what had happened to my father. And of course, I was so dramatic. I fell off the chair at the meeting sobbing. And somebody said, "What's wrong?" I said, "My father died." "When?" 6 years ago. But this is, it's like, this is AA. We get to reopen the wounds and heal the wounds. Progressive healing. That's what I think about. And we get to tell the secrets we never wanted to tell anybody anyway. So then I talked to Chuck C, who was just a wonderful, wonderful spiritual man in Los Angeles. And I said, I don't know how to make amends to all these people I worked with. Because I hadn't stolen money. I think I stole Post-its, you know, or paper. I mean, nothing. I didn't cheat like that. And he said something that changed my entire life and informed my career. My entire career has been built on this one thing, which is help God's kids get done what they think needs to be done, not what you think needs to be done. And so I started. Can you work on Christmas? Yeah. Can you go to Chicago tomorrow? Yeah. The best one was, can you go to Rwanda? It was like, Rwanda? I went. I spent 2 weeks in Rwanda. I mean, I cried 1,000 tears. It was so sad after the genocide. But I went on my own because that's what they asked me to do. And my whole, I started to have back surgeries and I'd be in bed and I'd write from bed. They'd ask me, can you do this story? Can you do this? I did it. I mean, I did it because that's what Chuck C told me we had to do. Help God's kids get done what they think needs to be done. And that just doesn't mean in work. That means in marriage. That means with your kids. That means in AA. I mean, I listened to these wonderful women talk about general service. And for me, I have always had a commitment at my home group. Always. That is essential to me. And my first commitment there, and this is part of the amends of living, is that I should just say how I got to the Pacific Group. So when I was 3.5 years sober, I had bought a house. I'd divorced my husband. I'd made amends to the man I was living with. And then I broke up with the boy I met at the second meeting. So I made amends to him, although I said, I will never speak to you again as long as I live. And now it's almost 43 years later, and we're such good friends. But anyway, so I bought this house. I did not read what the real estate person, I didn't read what I signed, okay? Cynthia, you make sure people read what they sign, okay? All right, so anyway, I didn't see that I owed $90,000 one year after purchase. It's called a wraparound loan. And so I'm sober 3.5 years. I'm insane. I was dating a guy on a Harley. I mean, it was just, I was just crazy. And they started to foreclose on my house. So I had to like hire a lawyer, meet the people foreclosing on my house. And I can't even believe I did this. I started dating the man who was foreclosing on my house. And so I went to a meeting one night and Clancy was speaking. Clancy, who I'd heard terrible things about, you know, dictator. He makes people wear dresses to meeting, you know, wear suits, whatever. And he said to me, why don't you come down to the Midnight Mission and have a cup of coffee with me? And I thought, no, I mean, you want me to go to Skid Row? And I did. Help God's kids get done what they think needs to be done. I went to Skid Row and I sat in his office and I talked to him. And finally, I told him about it. I was dating the guy foreclosing on my house. And he said, let's take a walk around Skid Row. And this is my second huge surrender in AA, which was he said, when are you going to see this guy again? And I said, I'm taking him to see the play Evita tomorrow night. And we walked around Skid Row, and he said, what I'm going to ask you to do is as difficult as asking these guys, because they were all men at the time, to stop drinking wine. And he handed me a note, and it said, tear up the tickets to Evita and cancel out. And he was asking this very willful 3.5 years sober woman who was so close to drinking, I didn't even know it, to stop this crazy behavior in AA. And I don't know why I did it. And I called my sponsor and she said, you should go to the Pacific group. And I said, oh my God, no, you know, that's a death sentence. But anyway, but I broke up with the guy and I went and I got my first commitment, which was cutting brownies. And the woman who was the head of the commitment was a dictator. If you were even 5 minutes late, she was like yelling at you. And anyway, so now I'm in the Pacific group and I'm taking commitments. And Pacific group is very much about action. It's not contemplative. But I go to meetings everywhere. I go to meetings everywhere. I was thinking when Ashley talked, I was in Phnom Penh once and I wanted to go to a meeting and I got in a rickshaw, went to a meeting and there were four people there. And I walked in, I'd been traveling for 2 weeks for work and I walked in and I just felt myself starting to breathe like, AA, you're everywhere. You're everywhere. I don't even care if I know what you're saying. You're here. We're here. We're in it together. Here we are. And that is one of the, AA is the greatest spiritual movement of the 20th century. There is no question about that. And a lot of it is controlled by women now. Yes. So now I'm trying to live with how do I continue to make these amends? And so this is what I did. For my family, I invited my family to come out and stay with us and go to SeaWorld. I didn't know that 17 people would say yes. And they all got on a plane and came to California and stayed here. Just everywhere in the house. And we went to SeaWorld and it started this journey with this Irish Catholic family in St. Louis that I had run away from. And all these years later, I think of, oh my God, I am a member of my own family and I would have cut them off forever. With my brother, we had a huge fight once when my mother died and I was never going to speak to him again. And then I had to work a step and I had to, somebody asked me to speak in Kansas and I called my brother and said, I'm coming to Kansas City. And he said, we would love to see you. I hadn't talked to him in 2 years and I showed up and he showed up and we went to see all my nieces and nephews. And I said to myself right there, you are never going to miss their lives ever. This is over. You're going to love this man, whether he ever says he loves you again. And I did. And I loved him and I visited him and I did all those things. I can't even remember if maybe once he said he loved me. But I can tell you this, when he died and I went to his funeral, I never cried as hard in my whole life for anyone as I did that day. And I also sat with his friends who'd been in the war with him, Korean War. And I learned more about my brother that day than I ever had because he, like me, didn't talk about anything. He didn't talk about anything. And as for my father, the amend that I made to my father started in Akron. I don't know if Gail's still on here. Somebody talked in Akron when I was there for Founders Day about their father. And I had just dismissed my father. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was the one that was, I love my mother. My father died, whatever. So I'm sitting in this meeting at Founders Day in Akron, Ohio, maybe 6-7 years ago. And I just touched my hair and I thought, I have my father's hair. And it was just a thought. And then I thought, I have my father's personality. You should see me at this school that I work. I know everybody. I know every janitor. I know everyone. I talk to everyone. I am like the friendliest person in the world. And I thought, I am my father. That is my amend to my father, to love him, because he gave me the best qualities that I have. But then I thought, how do I make amends to him? So the way I make amends to him is I thank him every day. I get on my knees and I say, I thank you. And then I realized that thanking my father wasn't enough, going to his grave. I had to be kind to older people. I did. That's my job. My job in it. You think I'm old? I mean, I am old. I'm, you know, almost 43 years old, but there are a lot of people older than I am in my home group who need help and care and love. And I don't know what it was. It just the recognition that I'm like my father and I love my father, and I need to do more than just love my father. So I started just loving and trying to help people. And that all seemed fine until when I was 57, I was let go from this job I'd had for, you know, 20 years. We love you so much, they said, Mary. We love you so much. You're ambassador to Hollywood. Goodbye. And at the same time, I think Ashley was talking about Al-Anon. Somebody in Al-Anon said I should write an inventory about my marriage because it was really hard, and I wrote it. And, you know, and I knew I had to make all kinds of amends, but I wrote it, I did it, I said it. And the woman I read it to said, you know, you need to either see a priest or somebody because you're Catholic and you're so conflicted. So I took it home, I put it in the back of my closet under a whole bunch of clothes and behind a chest, and went to a dinner with some women. And I got a call from my husband maybe an hour later saying, I've read your inventory. And it was, honest to God, that was it. Everything in my life was falling apart. My marriage fell apart. That was it. My marriage fell apart. I felt so violated. I tried to take him to Al-Anon. The problem with that was he would sit in the back in the corner on the floor and not listen, but I did listen. So now my marriage is over and my career's over and everything's over and I'm in my late 50s and it's over. But people in AA just kept saying, no, it's not over. It's just the beginning. This is this whole thing about AA and working the steps and forgiving people. Once we start to forgive, once we work the ninth step, then the promises start to come true. You know, we will know a new freedom, a new happiness. We will not regret the past or shut the door on it. So I moved forward. It was very difficult. And then, I don't know, things just started to happen. It was beyond my comprehension, truly. Wonderful things. I mean, wonderful things in my career. I mean, wonderful. And now I'm 75 years old. I work full time. I work with all young people because I'm a professor, and I spend my life giving back. That's what I realized. This is my phase of life. My phase of life is the give back phase. And I always thought it would be really horrible to be old. And honestly, I never really talked about being old, except now every day on the news, they're talking about the senior citizens who are at risk. I want to say the biggest risk is alcoholism for us. But anyway, so now I realize in this phase of my life that I'm in, I sponsor a lot of people, but I also have like 150 students right now. I'm reading, grading their papers, and I think, how lucky am I? And I am only lucky because I have continuously worked the program. It's not as if I made these amends and then that was it. These amends led to a full life. And even now, when I'm, if I'm really disturbed now, a couple of years ago, I was very disturbed, and my sponsor suggested I write an inventory. My sponsor is the woman who brought me in, the woman who said to the waiter, I'm an alcoholic. She'll be 50 years sober on Tuesday. And she said, you should write an inventory. And I thought, I wanted to say, I'm 40 years sober. I don't need to write an inventory, but I did. And out of that inventory came a forgiveness to somebody that I hadn't expected, and cleared the way. Because that's what it's all about. You know, the things they say when we're new, you can walk down the street and you don't have to avoid anybody. You can, you know, it's like clearing the channel to God. God can get in once we do this. I also want to say, it was funny. You never know when you're going to make an amend. Two things that surprised me, one is I was at a conference in Ojai, and I had dated this guy. I even forgot I dated him, but I do remember when he went out of town, I had a big party, invited 100 people to his house, and we basically wrecked it. And I tried to fix it up, but he walked into the conference. Oh, God. Oh. So I had to walk across the room and tell him and say, I want to make financial restitution, whatever, whatever. And I did. But the real last amends that was the most difficult was to nuns, because I hated them. They tried to tell me what to do. They tried to restrict me. The first way the amend started is a nun asked me to sponsor her. So I sponsor a nun. And I love this woman. She's the funniest. She's from Ireland. She's the funniest nun I've ever met. And then, lo and behold, I don't know how many years ago this was, 6, 7, I got a call from the nun I hated the most and asked me if I would come back to New York to receive this, Alumni of Achievement Award. And I thought, first of all, I didn't even know she was alive. And then I thought, well, I hope she won't be there. So I went to New York, whatever. And there in the front row were all the nuns who had kicked me out, who had restricted me, who had done all these things to me. And they were there. And I remember my first thought was, what, you're alive? I mean, I really, really thought they were dead, but there were alive, and there they were. And I gave my speech, and then I went over to talk to them, and they said, you were such a rascal. How did you change that? And I told them about AA, and I told them that when they were trying to help me, I was drunk. And I mean, it was such a huge, because that was the last big resentment, you know. And we all, this is a program not just to work, you know, they used to say, you know, you peel the onion. I thought, I don't even know what that means. But anyway, this is a program of constant revelation of ourselves. I wrote, it was a piece I wrote years ago for a magazine, and it was called Face to Face with, and the person was really famous. And what I realized during this whole COVID shutdown is it's face to face with me. We're all going through face to face with me. And things that I haven't thought about in years, I think about. Old reactions, overreactions that I haven't done in years have come up. Tears have come up. Emotions have come up. And then I had to face this thing where I wanted to protect this man, and I didn't think people were protecting him in the way I thought they were protecting him. And I was getting enraged, which is, it's been so long that I think what I did when I was so busy, when we weren't shut down, is I didn't feel all this because I just was too busy. And now I'm not too busy. And so I really surrendered that God's way is the way. And And I talked to somebody about it, and I got it out of my mouth. That's what we have to do. Get it out of your mouth. And I realized that all these years of working the steps and going to meetings and traveling and going to meetings everywhere, AA is, as I said, it's the greatest spiritual movement of the 20th century. And it's everywhere. And it only costs $5. No, in our group, we try to give five or one or two. And it's everywhere and it's available to us. And I think, as Gail said, I think the women, the amount of women, the influx of women talking to each other, telling us the truth, telling each other the truth, has really transformed AA. I mean, I do. And I think it's brought a kind of level of honesty that is really phenomenal. I never talk about that. I'm just talking about now because Gail did the thing about the women. But I do remember Sybil, the first woman, and she kept talking about all the men she was married to. This is in LA at this meeting. And I thought, that woman is telling this whole room that she was married five times? Oh, I thought my mother would have been so shocked, you know. But the truth is, I was like Sybil. I wasn't married five times, but I'm like Sybil. I'm like all of you. And I think that's all I have to say. I mean, I truly am feel honored. And I feel that this actually had a very spiritual impact on me, preparing for it and listening to the other women around the country. And so I want to thank, you know, especially Cynthia and Arisa and everybody and all the women who are here. So thank you very much.